Hey, everybody. Hope you guys are having a good holiday. You know, the holidays are here, and that means two things. One, arguments, and two, you got to buy gifts. One thing you do is buy yourself a gift. Come see my one-man show on Broadway, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak. We're still running. We're going through the end of January. This is my audience interactive show. Audience members coming on stage telling really amazing, cool, funny, bizarre, interesting stories from their lives. There's a whole bunch of clips on my Facebook and Twitter and Instagram feeds. You can check out the show. If you're in the area, please come. And you get 50% off. That's my gift to you this holiday season. Use the code PMFAN and go to telecharge.com and you get 50% off, half off for my show. Hope you can make it. And also, if you want to get some other great deals, go to deepdiscount.com. They have a ton of great deals at your fingertips for the holiday season. They've got movies, they got TV shows, they got t-shirts, they got all sorts of swag. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com, click on the link for deepdiscount.com. It'll get you there and you'll get all sorts of great deals. Right now, I just actually, about 4 days ago, got my brother-in-law, who's a huge Paul McCartney fan, Paul McCartney and Wings reissued, remastered works, and really sounds unbelievable, and it's a big, expansive set of material. Give it to people you like. It's a really great deal. It's at deepdiscount.com. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the link to get the deep discount. They also have new releases this week. The Equalizer 2, badass Denzel Washington, going to make things right. Plays a Lyft driver, which is a challenge in and of itself these days. He's on a personal mission to avenge the death of an old friend and colleague, but then in the process finds himself being tracked down as a target himself. Really great cast. Really great movie. It holds up just like the first one, maybe even better. That's rare to say. Check it out. Pick it up at a great discount at deepdiscount.com. And all sorts of great deals there. And again, go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the link. It'll get you deepdiscount.com. And check out my one-man show going through January. And my guest this week, you're going to like her. Here it comes. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. First-timers, thanks for joining us. I'm very excited to have my guest on, someone I've been a fan of for a long, long time. She's the voice of Lisa Simpson, and she also is the co-creator and co-host of a really great podcast called Small Town Dicks, which is in its third season, has a huge following, and it's Yardley Smith. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Yeah, I really love your idea of Small Town Dicks, and I have a certain personal affinity for it because there's this podcast, Crime Town, in its first year was focused on my hometown of Providence, Rhode Island, which is a lot of crime and mafia people. And so I really think this idea you have is really neat. I've seen it described as like This American Life meets Making a Murderer, which I thought was an interesting description.
Yeah, I would say, you know, that's, I heard that for the first time today, too. And it's, I would say This American Life because it's highly curated. It's, you know, how to say it. So all of our stories are told by the detectives who actually broke the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily professional storytellers. So there's a fair amount of editing that goes in. We never change the story, but sometimes, you know, they put the end at the beginning or
right.
Forgot something. And so you just, as you know, you take the puzzle pieces and then you arrange it so that your listeners can actually go, oh, I see that picture.
Right.
You know, it means something to them.
So. Yeah.
And in terms of making a murderer, I don't know. I just, for us, we wanted to highlight the big-time crime that's happening in small town USA, and we really wanted it to come from the horse's mouth, so to speak, so that rather than have the detectives tell Zibby Allen and I are the co-hosts,
mm-hmm.
Their story, we're like, you tell the story, so that the case and the detective are really the star of it, and Zibby and I are just the people who get to ask the questions if you had the guts or the opportunity, you know what I mean?
Well, you do a great job because you really give them a wide berth to, and I highly recommend anybody who hasn't heard it yet to go listen because you really become entranced. Like, you really feel like you're there. And you also have assets like jailhouse phone calls and suspect interviews and 911 calls.
Yeah.
How, I have so many questions about this, but first of all, why did you decide to pursue this kind of podcast? Was this something that was always an interest of yours, or it's very unique?
I really, I love true crime. I feel like, for me, the interest in true crime really comes down to trust. You know, our society doesn't function without a huge measure of trust. So when you cross the street and you have a green light and the cars have a red light, you trust that people aren't going to run you over.
Right.
When you encounter a policeman, you trust that they're going to do right by you.
Mm-hmm.
When you're growing up, you trust that your parents will look after you. And so crime is all about somebody deciding, I'm going to break that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those things that we are all so fascinated by, because how are we going to restore order? And people love heroes. And I think it speaks to the massive success of the Marvel movies and the Avenger movies. And we're really at a time where people want the good guys to win. And at the same time, there's a worthy but and also rather loud conversation about the bad actors in law enforcement.
Mm.
And I believe, while every profession has people who don't do right by the job they're in, more often than not, there are more people who are. And so one of the unexpected byproducts of the podcast is being able to shine a light on this really exceptional work that's going on in law enforcement.
Yeah.
And my favorite reviews are the ones from people, you know, other policemen and people who work in law enforcement saying thank you for giving us a platform to talk about how we do what we do and why we do it.
Yeah, there's a great quote of yours that says, one of the things that has been a real unexpected gift is that a lot of detectives say to us after they've done their interview how cathartic it is to have this space and time to tell the story from soup to nuts. Do they find it at times difficult to relive the experience? Is it a very emotional thing for them at times?
Yes, and interestingly, we Dan and Dave are identical twin detective co-hosts who are detectives in Small Town USA, and they're the ones who vet the crimes that we decide to do on the show. And sometimes they'll hear about a crime and like, oh, we really should do that one. And the detective who actually broke the case says, no, I can't. It broke me. Or it's too close to my heart and mind, maybe sometime in the future. So it is interesting. So but even so, the detectives we actually talk to, we always ask them, when you see something like that, when you see people doing the worst you could possibly do to other people, that they either know or don't know, what do you do with that? Where does that reside in you?
Mm.
It's really, the answer is often similar, but each one has their own specific way of finding a place for it. And it is a calling for these detectives.
What is that feeling? Is it a feeling lost hope in humanity? I mean, I don't know how these guys and women that do this don't get down on humanity. They see some really dark stuff and are part of some really dark stuff. Is there a common sort of thread or feeling or response to living that life?
Yes. The common thread is they don't want the bad guys to win, and that they really feel there's a higher obligation to do right by the person who has been the victim of this crime. I would also say that they're also different things. Like they have if you're a major crime detective where you investigate robbery or murder, both of those things are harrowing, but they don't seem to take as much a personal toll on you, at least not as quickly as, for instance, people like Dave, one of our detectives, was in sex crimes and child abuse.
Mm.
And the burnout rate for that position as a detective is quite a bit higher than people who do major crimes, because the horrible things that are done to children obviously just wreck you.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, I you know, it's so depressing. I mean, I'm on Yahoo is my thing, so I'm on is my email, so I tend to have Yahoo News. It seems like a week can't go by where some guy isn't or woman isn't drowning or killing their kids. And I can't even read this. I can't even read past the headline because I have a kid. Like, I can't watch movies that are fiction where something bad happens to a kid. It just, I can't imagine if you're a family man or woman and you're doing this work. I can't even imagine how you could get your head around that and like, put one foot in front of the other the next day. It's got to be really hard.
And I think that they feel as though, especially if they have kids, like I'm gonna catch this one.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, my kid is safer, and all the kids are safer. It's like I said, it's a calling for these people. They're doing all of the stuff that the rest of us run from.
Mm. In an indirect way, is this also a bit of a sociological examination of sort of why people commit crimes and sort of the bad behavior in society as well? Are you finding that as a sort of a byproduct of this thing?
I think that that's a really interesting question. I do think that people want to know why my neighbor, who seemed like a great guy, he has four children and a wife, and he's so happy, and why are there 12 bodies buried in his backyard?
Right.
I think people feel as though there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Mm.
What was the one thing that went wrong for him that was probably not that big that sent him over the edge?
I was just thinking about that. This guy, what's his name? He killed his wife and two or three kids and then put them in bags. And I was on the news the other night. I was in the hotel room, and I'm like, and then they had a shot of him because they like brought him into the house, and they had video of him as they were like literally unfolding what happened, and you could see his face change. And I'm like, and then there was this woman who drowned two 10-month-old kids in a tub the other day. Like, and I'm like,
what is that?
I know, it's unbelievable. It's like, and it really, you know, it's the scary part of, you know, human nature. I mean, I think it's a really interesting podcast on so many levels. It's really great. This idea of trust, I was really fascinated by that because I had read something where you talked about that, and I never looked at it that way, but it's a really interesting insight into kind of how we should look at this, you know? I love, by the way, just to switch gears a little bit on Lisa and your voiceover work with Lisa, how I had Frank Oz on my podcast, and we talked about, you know, him working with Jim Henson and him creating, you know, different Muppet characters. And he said, you know, people think that we're like, he said, we imbue these puppets with our own characteristics. Like Frank said, I was insecure for a long time as a young man. And so I made Miss Piggy have a bit of insecurity. It was the only way to be able to do these things. And I was wondering, when you got Lisa as a character initially, you got 30 years ago now, that's celebrating 30-year anniversary of such a great show. Was the character one way, and then you started to put some of Yardley into that character, or was it pretty set in stone?
Lisa wasn't really a character. She didn't really have a personality other than being a foil for Bart until we went to Half Hour. So when we were doing the bumpers on the Tracy Ullman show, where we told the whole story in about a minute and 20 seconds, split up into three or four sections, Lisa was just, you know, the bratty little sister. And then when we went to Half Hour, it was Jay Selbrooks who said, I want her to play the saxophone, and I want her to be this prodigy and super smart. And the writers actually all say that Lisa Simpson is really who they were when they were growing up, that they were all these exceptionally bright misfits who couldn't figure out where they fit in. And so they have imbued Lisa Simpson with those characteristics. And I, though I was never super smart like that, I was what I sort of refer to as a floater. when I was growing up in school. Like, I didn't have any particular allegiance to any specific social group, like not with the popular kids or the jocks or the nerds. Or I sort of visited all of those different pods but didn't belong to any of them. And so I really do, I relate to Lisa Simpson not being able to figure out where she fits in, and there's tremendous loneliness in that. And what are you going to do with that? Is it going to make you more resilient, or is it going to bring you down? And of course, Lisa Simpson is who I wish I had been at 8, and often sometimes who I wish I were at 54. I feel like she's the best parts of all of us.
Yeah.
And she also, but I love, love, love her sense of humor as well.
Yeah, she,
Simpson,
go ahead.
So, so funny.
Yeah.
And, but if you don't, you know, and they put her on the soapbox a lot. She's, people say she's the moral center of the show, and that's true, but Lisa Simpson only succeeds as a character and as someone that you'll continue to invest in if you remember that she's 8 years old and you also imbue her with that great sense of humor and her childlike wishes and desires. You have to have both. Otherwise, she just becomes this really insufferable, precocious child that everybody just tunes out, you know?
Exactly. And you talk about, like, you say you worried a lot, like, when you were young, like Lisa, you were a perfectionist, and something I relate to is a talent in this business. You said, I set the bar sometimes unreasonably high, but now I sort of chuckle. Well, that's pretty fantastic. Let's see if we can touch that bar. And then you say, now, for instance, the rejection that we get in show business, it's not that it doesn't affect me anymore. I just recover from it more quickly. And I kind of related to that. But you have to grow to that point. But Lisa, playing Lisa helped you loosen up a little bit and loosen up the grip on perfectionism a little bit in playing the role, you think?
Yes, maybe. Dom, I do feel like through Lisa Simpson, I've been able to work through a lot of anxiety, to be honest. Like, one of the things that actually makes me sad, and there was something about it, a few weeks ago in an episode where Lisa Simpson actually got a happy ending. Carolyn Omine, who wrote the episode, said, I love to give Lisa a happy ending because it makes Yardley so happy. It's such a rare occurrence. You know, they often give her something and then she never gets to keep it.
Yeah.
And especially things like Friends, which I find devastating.
Yeah.
But one of the great things about fiction and show business is that even if the ending is sad or bad, at least you can sort of prepare for it. And I think Lisa Simpson has taught me resilience. And so that comment about, it's not that I don't get affected by the rejection in show business, I just recover more quickly, has a lot to do with playing that character for the last 30 years.
Yeah, well, that's great that you can get there, because you never really, the sting never goes away when you get rejected.
No, it doesn't.
And no matter how old you are. So I really related to that. I'd love to talk to you more. I know you got to jump. This is great. Maybe down the road we have you on again, because there's so much more stuff I want to talk to you about. But where can people get the podcast and hear that? Because they really should go listen to that.
First of all, I'd love to come back and be on your show. This has been lovely and wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And the podcast is available everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you like to listen.
So, okay. All right. Small Town Dicks. Go get some Small Town Dicks. There you go. Let's see what we did with that. We made it a little dirty. and tremendous success, continued success with Lisa. And I got to get you and Frank Oz together maybe, because it's very similar, the stuff you said about that effect that character's had on you and the effect that his characters had on him and vice versa. They're living human beings, I feel like, to you actors, you know, so it's really,
they really, really are.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Thank you. Good luck. Everybody go check out Small Town Dicks. It's everywhere. And obviously keep watching The Simpsons. Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. How cool is that? Getting behind the voice of Lisa Simpson. Very, very cool. Hope you enjoyed the show. Please check out my one-man show, and please leave reviews if you like the show on iTunes. Always helps. Have a great week. Buy some nice gifts. Buy me something. We'll see you next week.